Yeah, so we have these kind of, part of some of the questions that have been coming out lately have been about the overall framework or structure. I think from my point of view, again, it's this group that has to define that, and I think all things are on the table. I don't think we've decided anything in so much as what all these APIs and different groups and stuff are. Now, you know, Peter's trying to write another document to show some of this, but I think it's, again, a work in progress, and also, I think this thing's going to change a lot. So, I thought that maybe we could talk about this for a while, but I think it's not like I know all the answers to these things or have it all mapped out in my head, and hopefully we can at least get somewhere here. I think it's important that we do make it modular, that we do define good API boundaries. I think the problems with CM GUI and CM today are that those boundaries never really existed. In CM GUI, we've managed to retrofit some of those quite well. The boundary defined elements is quite well defined now, and that, you know, objects outside of the finite element library inside CM GUI don't know about how the nodes are stored anymore. It used to be, you know, there was heaps of code that adjusted nodes around, but there's very, very few now, and I think that sort of modularity enables you to build a system bigger than what one person can understand or has to code. And so I think that's what we need to do. The discipline of writing the API enables a whole lot of people to have a discussion about it without having to know the details of everything inside, underneath there. Enables people to program for those APIs. That's why how we manage to program anything to do with Microsoft or Linux or anything is because we know what the API is and we don't have to program device drivers. So I think those disciplines and that principle is I'm almost presuming that we're working on, and beyond that, the actual layout of the whole thing, I'm not quite sure. About a year ago, you drew a diagram of different parts. I drew a diagram of all the different bits that were in CM GUI and tried to say some of these were important. Maybe it's time for another such diagram. That's a field of ML one, yeah. Do we want to address that? I mean, would that help?
I actually think getting the big picture of how these data structures are accessed from computational code is actually important.
I don't know what that means.
Well, I'm just thinking if you have a general description of data structures where you're assuming that you can interrogate that to pull out maybe interpolation of the field at any point, but it's very expensive in terms of the way you actually do computation with finite elements when you're looping over elements and you always know the element number you're running. You very often know the assigned position you're talking about because of the class point. So the mechanism of accessing information in the data structures in relation to common, the way that the statements and matrices are assembled should be thought about as you describe the data structures and the active elements, because that's...
Well, that API will define them. And I tried to address that by talking a little bit about caching as well.
So the problem I have at the moment is if you have an API that says everything below this is a parameterization of a field, but you don't need to know about that parameterization above that level, you just get into the field itself, if it's on that field. If now you say, I want above that API, I want to assemble a stiffness matrix for this particular element, you do know an element number that's sort of part of your parameterization.
Yeah, I mean my element, the API that I think we're writing does have elements, and you know, you do know about elements and xylocations, and I imagine an object that enables you to cache the lookup of a field at a particular place so that it doesn't have to do the whole lot of work of setting up those parameters over and over again.
Yeah, but
And that's what writing down the API to, how are we going to access fields, evaluate them, defines that, tells you exactly how that is. And it's not a generalized structure, it's a very specific one that says, given an element and an entire location, I can evaluate this field.
So that's saying though that when you enter the API, you do have a knowledge of your element number.
I think you totally do.
But then you are transmitting the knowledge of the parameterization of the field outside the API.
Yeah, I do.
I think that's
okay.
I don't know that was my understanding of what you're trying to hide.
No, what we're trying to hide is the details about how you're storing it.
Is there a difference between separating modules of code and hiding information that they're not? Those aren't the same thing. We want them to define the boundaries that exist in.
I guess even the other thing that you do though, is you provide an interface that says I can get at all this information, but I have to request it. And that allows you to store it if you want.
Because we're constructing a distributed memory program, or at least one that is capable of that, I think we need to be more explicit about accessing information. See, at the moment we assume everything exists in memory and we can access whatever we like whenever we like. But I think for this we need to assume that could be the case, or that every processor could have its own copy of it, or that one processor shares a copy of, or shares the information as it's requested, or that in fact it comes from the other side of the world through a web interface, and nothing local has any information about the model itself. And for all of those to be equally valid, I think you need to separate out the storage of the model and the fields that compose that from the computational code that makes use of that to solve the problem. I think that also gives us an advantage that we can say, okay, some people are going to work on the computational code, and that development can proceed in parallel with the other parts of the code without
which require different skill sets.
Exactly, and I mean Travis and perhaps others, Mark, we have people who are going to work much more on the computational aspects than perhaps they will.
We're back down into a very small detail level. I guess I put on the agenda that people wanted to look at the big picture, but I've had three people mention this. Chris being one of them, he's not here, but just how does, you know, what is all the other bits? And I guess I'm not very sure. You know, we have a computational kernel, we have this library, we have some sort of solver system, and I guess those are the three bits I can think of. I don't know.
I would think that a solver is something that a computational library makes use of.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's another part, yeah. That's exactly what I mean.
But I think, in my mind, as I'm seeing it at the moment, one module is the data structure storage, which describes your model, or describes your fields, your geometry of your fields, and that is independent. Then you've got a computational module, you've got one which is a graphical module for, which is basically just the 3D window of CMGUI, maybe with some extra dialogues and so on that are needed for that. Then you've got a user interface module, which is separate again, which give some access to that, and maybe scripting or whatever is at a different level as well. But you've possibly also got the possibility of not scripting and not having a user interface, but hard writing a single executable that pulls parts out of, say, the data structure library and the computation library to solve one particular problem,
yes,
without any reference to these other things, if that's what is needed for an efficient computation. And especially in a distributed environment where you're wanting to minimize the additional baggage that you carry across a number of machines, I think you want to keep those other parts as far away from
I think that's really important, and one just one thing that I wasn't clear about last time, which Shane explained to me afterwards, which I tried to write down here, this notion that if you do have your data structure, there's the API that's accessing information, computation, graphics, etc., from the data structure. And over here is the API which Shane called number three, which is where you've got some knowledge of the architecture of your machine system. And what you're doing is, in fact, imposing that architecture on the way that you structure these guides. And it's a separate API from what happens here.
But I almost think that architecture could look different to the data structure library and to the computational library. So the data structures might think I'm a single processor, one machine, I've got everything in memory, that's all I know about really. I'm going to take requests for information and give it out. Now the computation part knows that it wants to distribute the problem in terms of solving it across a large number of processes. It knows that, or say the graphic to show the solution progressing, it's going to need to feed information back to the data structure library as it goes. But the data structure library itself,
I think that computational kernel at that point tells the data structure library that's what it knows that needs to happen, because then we only have to implement that sort of functionality once. We don't have to implement for every different computational problem. It can be shared between different computational problems. It can be used, you might change the way a different field's stored at any given time. I think it allows it to be shared.
I guess the question is whether the fields in the data structure and the data structure module are the things that need to be shared or need to be.
I'm hoping that they are the only things. What else is there?
Your solution matrices.
As far as I'm concerned, it's going to be stored in a field.
But that. I'm not sure.
Yeah. What if you could reduce smoke?
Yeah, sure. I think.
I don't agree with that.
Well, but okay. Let's say, I think the results to me can be stored in a field.
Eventually, not necessarily at computation time.
No, okay, but even at computation time, there's a solution process that needs to go on and some matrices that have to be formed.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's a different library, but again, I think it should be shared between problems.
The library for really shared between problems.
Well, the implementation, the way of dealing with distributing, we don't want to have to rewrite that for every different problem.
Yeah. So you have a library which handles distributed arrays.
Yes.
Isn't that saying that this interface that's imposing a particular architecture here is actually not only getting it up for
it's kind of semantic whether it's part of this or not.
Okay, but it's also setting it up for the storage of how you do it.
So I think the arrow goes the other way. This is accessing some library that says, how do I manage 15 or this network of processes that I have? And the data storage library makes sense of that.
I think it goes both ways. The problem was to say, I'd like this field distributed across every node, I'd like this field distributed, the thing can't possibly ask for that information, it needs to say. You need to say, I'd like it done like this, here's my field, distribute across, here's my field,
but is it
put
important?
This on this node, put this on that node.
And it's important,
I think it goes both ways. I have no problem with that. I don't know what that API actually has in it yet.
Yep.
That's what I see it. I don't necessarily know all those things, but I think we need some sort of control API. That's all that says.
I thought this was one way in the sense that you were saying, once you know your architecture, you use that knowledge to impose how you organize
it. Yeah, but that thing might then ask you, it might have extra questions, like how many nodes are there altogether. You know, how much memory have you got or whatever.
Is this API like HDX?
No, I thought it was like, please put yourself like this.
Is it a description of how data is stored? So it's saying, how do I manage
data in
this? Yeah,
which is
sort of what HDF is.
No, HDF is more like what we're doing. It's a description about that these things are grouped together. It's a part of both.
Okay.
actually it's just as groups of data and says this will look to that. I guess at some point if you're doing distributed HDF, you must be able to say, I want these bits in different places. And I don't know how that's managed. I'd live with
it. I guess I still see a clear distinction between setup of your model and problem and computational arrays and loops that you use to solve that problem. And that those are fundamentally distinct. One may be distributed, one and the other may not.
But isn't that all that same bracket? But up here is that process of how you do the object assembly and how you handle the stiffness matrices. This API here, this imposing structure, is both determining how you handle your fields across distributed memory and it's determining how you handle your stiffness matrices.
Yeah, well, that's slightly different. Shane's saying that it's also telling you how you make fields available for the computational across.
Yeah, well, if you know that if your problem is the only thing, the problem is the only thing that knows that I'm going to be solving these points on that processor, and so it needs to tell that library that's where they're going to be needed.
Can I just
spend half an hour on these details again? I'm not sure that they were the things that people were asking. You know, we're trying to address.
Can I ask a question about the instance of the computational module? Is this the module that solves mechanics and electrical activation, or can we have computational utility like finite element matrix assembly, and then your mechanics module and the electrical activation module provide functions
throughout the assembly
functions?
That's how I see it, that you're building up from low-level functions into higher-level ones. And the top level is, say, solving a bi-domain model that makes use of the other computation parts in the same way that it's making use of solver libraries to actually solve it, and you're making use of a sparse matrix library to handle it.
I'd like to see it as we're providing tools so we can solve patients as easily as possible, adding a minimal amount.
So it's making it modular at every step, not monolithic.
I really don't want a big computational module that really.
I guess I'm saying that module means that we have a boundary that separates.
But those boundaries will exist in those other parts. They're going to be modular. If you are going to break it up into smaller modules, then you will have boundaries, otherwise you won't have modular.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not a monolithic computational module that you must.
So can someone lay out some of more of these parts?
Yeah, I'll do that because I've got that outline.
Okay.
I'll try and merge that other one with this.
Okay.
I mean, my point for bringing it up is I think if we can be clear about it, we can start pushing different parts of it to people who are skilled in that area and not have to keep... Well, I think we often get... We're trying applying things that are actually relevant for one area and it gets a leap into the other places where, we need to try and push things into smaller...
Just wondering how diverse that computational module will be, because I mean, just going back to what Carl was saying, the fundamental ideas behind solving something like mechanics and solving something like electrical activation, or the differences between boundary elements and finite elements, clearly there's some overlap, but there are fundamental differences between all of these things, and how to really tease out that the common things is going to be the challenge. non-linear equations versus linear equations,
but aren't we assuming they're all linear? And for example, I do think we need to make some choices in the way, like, we're not going to use sonic differences, we're always going to assume we're working on that fundamental boundary, which includes sonic
volumes. And does it make sense that a sensible choice is always treated as being non-linear, finite elements.
So
efficiency purposes and so on.
I think it is, because 99% of the interesting problems we deal with are not in the area. We can always solve the linear bits anyway, it's prime sticking.
Doesn't that assume that you have to go back to the data API each time? Like for a mechanics problem, you have to give the well, you have the solutions time to generate your new matrix.
Yeah, right.
So in biomain, you're solving your elliptic and parabolic parts, separating the first or splitting, you don't need to do that.
Exactly.
And that's a big efficiency loss.
Exactly. That's the sort of thing I'm getting at.
I think that's what Chris is kind of getting at too, is the mechanics problem demands to know the node positions at each step of the amount you're solved versus the time to net linear, you don't need to do
anything. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So it's vastly different problems, as you're saying.
Yeah, and I'm with that in mind, I'm having trouble actually in visiting what this computational module actually contains. It's not that separated from the data structure. That's another thing again.
If you made the assumption that you're starting with the biomain problem on the full heart, and you assume that you don't know that you're doing mechanics, then you can easily proceed. But once you start thinking about mechanics, the world just gets all twisted, because then you've got the data distribution problem becomes much more difficult.
That's right.
And the amount of your solve becomes much more difficult. So
that's where I'm coming from. So I can see the line between the data structures, I think, but the actual way that you go about solving these things,
if you think about the types of problems we solve, one is finite information mechanics, which is nonlinear, another is CFD, which is nonlinear. We've got reaction, the third is reaction diffusion, which we agree could be linear or nonlinear. There's not that many of them. What else would you need to throw in that?
What's the things we do with boundary elements?
Reaction diffusion. So you don't need very many of these basic modules that deal with the function.
Setting another one.
Setting the
effort stream. So do we envisage that these modules will be separate for each of those types of problems?
But they may not use of some low-level module.
Surely they will.
You'd like to think that they will.
Yeah.
And designed that way, then you could add finite differences in if you needed it.
Yes.
While maintaining it completely separate of the other.
So they use common low-level functions, but they also feed into a common global system for the solution process.
Yes.
At the end of the day, they all come back to the main level to see where this program is.
Right. So is that the way to think about these series of computational modules, sort of in the middle in some way?
Yeah.
And they are separate?
Because I think you're...
That's the picture Peter finding through.
Yeah.
Can you understand all this theory?
That's not like a model of you. It's all on tape.
Coming to sort of an agreement on it, but I'm not sure if I certainly understand it on the effect. Can someone take the picture in a bit more detail for me?
I can probably finish this thing off with that tonight, okay. So we can get it to Chris tomorrow.
I guess there's another question, which is, we were originally in a way of proceeding without thinking of the data distribution from the MPI, and as Chris has pointed out, it's very difficult to do, so do we proceed now with having it be a very important part?
I think it is a very important part, but I'm not quite sure. No one's pointed out to me anything that's like in our data structures that makes it impossible. You know what I mean?
Decisions like, if we're doing mechanics and we've got node positions and it's not, you know, said it only 50 elements, so it's not an ordinate amount of data to store on each processor.
Yeah.
Do we share it and use that to build the problem with mechanics, then we have to go back and update the node positions because it's...
Okay.
I think those sorts of decisions, that would be a dangerous way to go, but those sorts of decisions, I don't think it would be...
Okay. We're trying to make the stuff we implement today as simple as possible.
Yeah.
Okay? Secondly, we want to be careful about our APIs and the things that we set. Even though they're not set in concrete, we're trying to make them as set as we can. We want to think and make make sure we don't make it impossible to retrofit to do these things when we can, and then we just have to get on with it. And so we haven't said that we're going to do mechanics at this point, so we want to make sure that the MPI structures that we do build will allow more than one degree of freedom at a node, no doubt. And in fact, we haven't got nodes at the moment, so that's implied. But there is no such thing. So, but we do want, we need to be make sure that we, that as we're thinking about things, we have that in mind, but we might not implement that until we need it.
Isn't it just that this process of defining the API here is, allows you to now impose a Petsky type structure on this if you choose to? But defining what you need in here is a separate issue from how that gets organized for a particular machine.
Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I think what Peter's just pointing out is specifically how it's stored based on what architecture is using, you know, Petsy type arrangement.
Yeah.
What's in there, what it represents, like,
I don't know at that point until after our meeting last week that you're actually using those to now say how you organize the data structures.
And I'm hoping we might have different implementations. One might be MPI or one that's just a shared memory one.
I guess I'm a little worried about trying to think before we even written this code to try and imagine the LML being written for 10 different types of architecture. I think we should instead just assume one.
Exactly. Well, I think, but the one we have to do first is shared memory, that's what we're going to do, and then MPI.
I think, as Chris said in his email, isn't the best model to go for the N times PN thing? And that fits with shared and distributed memory, if you can tune it around those that sort of model. Isn't that the way to go?
I don't know. I didn't actually read
N being number of machines and PN being number of processes per machine.
No, but a single shared memory implementation that knows it's on one node and whatever is a much simpler thing. See, we don't. It doesn't have to deal with all the other stuff. It doesn't have to link against MPI.
One times MPI.
But that's a simpler case. Okay. And the next one is a generalization of that. As long as we haven't broken that, I think the first one is still much simpler and much easier and useful to us in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think we should focus on that data structure here and the API going upwards. Yeah. And then let Chris actually come up with...
I asked him to do that.
For how this might work with an N times PN model and an API.
So his recent email this morning was... basically against that.
He
did say what it wanted to be, what percent.
Yeah, I think he did. I mean, he doesn't, it's only, I've only cottoned on to this in the last 5 years.
I agree.
We need to, Chris can't
say anything. I haven't seen this though.
Okay. Yeah. Do we need to work out whether FieldML cares what architecture it's on? Why should it?
FieldML is a file format, is it?
Serialization, whatever data structures.
But I'm hoping the discussion that we're having, don't worry about it, if it's serial.
The main thing, unless I heard you wrong, I thought your point was we need to work out our architecture so we can define FieldML.
Forget storing it. We're just talking about keeping it in memory. I mean, storing it in memory, not serializing it.
Defining doesn't even consider anything to do with architecture.
That's right.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
No, I don't. Exactly. So again, there's another separate module which is
and that might use HDF or something.
That's right, and
some XML.
Does this mean that the computational part doesn't care about FieldML either?
It has to sort of know about concepts of elements.
Nodes and that there are parameters that it has to
know. It just needs to know what the API needs to know the rules.
For getting at those parameters.
Does it need to know what's stored in the data structure, or does it only need to know what it wants, and then you have an API, which is essentially
a library that interfaces the two and translates from what the computational model thinks.
Well, hopefully we don't have to translate for
it. Hopefully it's exactly the same.
Exactly.
But it shouldn't matter if it's not.
Well, no, we want to make it right so that we don't have to translate. You need this to be efficient.
We don't want to be translating. That's true.
I'd be very concerned if there was a layer on the phone that went through Corver.
Layer in between is Corver.
Agreed.
So hopefully the data structures that we create, which is the interface to these data structures that we're creating now and been describing, is something that we can use directly. So the second API, which was the one that I, which is computational, is how to evaluate these things. And there's, I introduced two functions. I want to be able to evaluate this field of positions and evaluate those positions, the derivatives as well.
It's the same reverse direction as well.
I need to be able to set the order. So the first one is kind of, the first API says I need to be able to get parameters and set parameters and create elements and read elements and so on. And the second one is not a get-set side of interface, it's more I just need to evaluate values and derivatives. And I'm not sure if there's anything else. And so that's why I tried to write that down. Is there anything else?
So the second API is the field ML, the first API, getting data from computational kernel.
So the computational module is saying I need to evaluate this element, this element, this element, you know, at these Gauss points, and it just goes and gets the value.
And it may do that by perturbing one of the parameters.
It needs to be able to ask for derivatives with respect to parameters and with respect to XI, which is another parameter.
No, I don't think it's asking for derivatives with respect to a parameter, because we need to make the assumption that you're always doing the global stiffness derivatives via a finite difference. So you're just simply perturbing the parameter of the field.
But you won't get very accurate.
That's what we do at the moment. All our
stiffness. It would converge much better if you actually had
We can work out those derivatives.
I tried that for mechanics. I actually implemented the full derivatives with respect to geometric parameters.
Okay.
First of all, it was a hell of a lot slower. Doing the full analytic derivatives and implementing them was so much more computationally involved. And the accuracy was, for my particular problems I was solving, I was thinking it would, I can justify the extra computational expense because I'm going to be using much, much fewer iterations. It wasn't the case.
There must be problems then, because I had a non-linear problem in my thesis, and it took me a long time to write the first derivatives.
Yeah.
But it improved the convergence of a lot. And it was a faster.
So you're doing the analysis, doing the math is hard, and you have to write a lot more code, but I can't see why that'd be longer to evaluate.
Because when we should be able to support that without requiring.
Well, although if you're able to support it, there's a lot of code commits to write inside the data structure library.
You want the facility to store it without requiring that to be allocated or created if you're not using that.
Yeah, but someone has to go and do the analytical.
Yeah, again, and also the
it does. So long as the API allows you to ask for those derivatives, that's exactly what I want to put in the API today without saying whether we do or we don't necessarily.
Exactly.
But that's what I'd like to do. And I don't know how to describe those parameters. You see, that's what we have to figure out to put in the API.
Right.
It's not how we're going to implement, but how does you want to describe these things? And those exact things that Peter was asking for before, about if you're repeating to ask for evaluations on the same element, you want to be able to have some sort of cache object that you can say, okay, I'm going to do lots of computations on this element, here's this object, and it doesn't have to set itself up every time.
Yeah.
So you're talking about how do I say I want to do it with respect to Psi 1?
Yeah.
How do I actually
describe that in a general way?
Do we need...
I mean, you could put a number there, but it's not that general, you know? It's not...
Well, the number could be, you could have a mapping option that's a number, essentially. From it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's really hard because, I mean, you're not just dealing with first derivatives as well. You could be dealing with cross derivatives.
But
is that a problem? Programming you computationally and you're saying, I'm going to want these things and I can number them from 20 and they are called d by the s1, d by the s2.
Exactly what we do. Right?
Exactly what we do. Yeah, exactly right. And that means that for writing all of the rest of your computational code, you're saying I have 1 through 20 or whatever I want to call them. You have this mapping that says...
So long as we define what those mappings mean in a generalized way as well.
But all it needs to do is to be able to say, okay, when I come to the data structure library to access this information, I'm going to want to pull it from this particular place, which is named in the field amount according to this.
I mean, the way that it's done in computer variables, which again is a system we don't use, is that you create an object to represent that derivative, and when you ask for that evaluation, you say, I want it with respect to this object, and that object encapsulates the information about what order of derivative it is or whatever. And so if you know you're going to ask for those derivatives over and over again, you create an array with these 8 things in them,
yeah.
And you pass array number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then the library underneath can say, I've already dealt with that, I recognize it. And because you created it in the API, it can hold all sorts of caching information and information about what it means. So it can be done quite well.
The danger with having the sort of index thing you talk about is what if you want to change it, and if it's throughout your computational thing, then it's going to be very much more difficult to change that list of indices.
Yep. So it creates these objects. Now, I guess what I'm asking...
That mapping is defined per problem.
Well, is it there? And how do you define it then? It's the same question.
It's part of your problem setup.
Yeah, but you've got to write me an API, a functional API that tells me how to tell the thing what those mean. You know, number one means this. Again, you've got to create an object or something that describes that derivative, don't you? Or interpret a string or something. But I'd be reluctant to base it on string.
Yeah, although apart from string, who knows what number it is to mean.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So one way of doing it is you create objects that tell you that this is this derivative. And then if we're going to allow these, white specify these derivatives with respect to parameters, we need to be able to describe those parameters in an efficient way. In a reusable way. See, the problem with field ML at the moment is that all the parameters are in a big long list. So parameter number 37 is what you actually want to deal with when actually you know, node by node by node, I'm actually dealing with the second derivative, you know? And so you need to be able to make an object that says second derivative but applies to lots of nodes, so you know we don't have
mapping.
Such a
problem. The claim is what I'm saying about a mapping. Yeah. The object is
the
mapping, it's not.
Yeah, it is. It's a way of encapsulating that information in a computer API.
What's the problem with how second derivative is at the moment?
I have no real problem with those computers.
Okay. Can you describe how that happens then?
In computer variables, in computer fields and in normal fields, we actually do use indices. We use 1, 2, 3 to be first derivative.
That's how
CMGUI has only ever done first derivatives before, and that's been a huge headache to us. And it's a pain, and we don't want to stay like that. We ask for grants straight away, and then you've got no more derivatives, and that's a pain to us. We'd like to be able to have the derivatives of grants.
Yeah.
So that means, you know, that's when you get to computer variable language, just to try to address these things.
So we may want derivatives with respect to parameters other than geometric or
spinning.
Yeah. Okay. We can't just enumerate a list and keep assigning numbers until we're...
I mean, even if we do the parameter derivatives by finite difference, you could have a library that just abstracts that a little bit. So all the computational thinks that it's getting real derivatives, and you just sell that little library card. So it's a little module here.
Yeah.
So it's another little modularity that's not inside field ML, but it's just in between. You could write.
Because a lot of these details are going to be worked out once we start doing a mechanics problem.
I agree.
So it might be good to wait and see what happens when we start doing mechanics.
But I can try to address them because we have to point them out a little bit.
Because we want the place there for that code to go.
Yeah, which is what Peter's
going to do. There's going to be more things added.
Lots and lots. No doubt. Okay, can I just take the last 5 minutes and just try and address our plan? I have been trying to work this group to a timetable because I think I'm not interested in talking for the rest of this decade, which we could easily do. Peter and I in the middle of December said, end of January or something, and Peter said, that's a long way away. I said, that's going to come real fast. It is end of January. We haven't even defined our field ML. I don't know what to feel a bit. I know some of these people, some of you around here have also said, let's give this a period of time and see what happens. What are we thinking about timescales at this point?
How's
Paul
getting on the local
town? I have no idea. He hasn't talked to me since Thursday.
Well,
across
the line.
Yeah. Exactly.
But why don't we have another meeting tomorrow or Thursday, and I'll try and get this done and talk. And I think Paul was working on the town hall.
Okay.
I'll see if there's no what the timescale of getting a concrete job and how hard. Structure description.
I mean, and someone can start thinking about what's required for our matrix and solver side.
Yeah, well, if we get the bigger picture, then you can start to allocate tasks differently.
So, question related to that is, the way we do bottoming right now is the grid-based spin.
Right.
And there's been talk of not having this general, this specific type of fine element that's really cheap to compute with. But it's a lot faster than right now the way it is back in the media. It's a lot faster. What is the strategy for that? Are we going to use some kind of grid-based FEM where we have a large macro description of the geometry that's fed down into the computational kernel, and from there you use finer elements?
I hope what we can do is the computational will see each of those little elements as a real element, right?
Uh-huh.
And it'll be able to say, I want these values of this element. But internally, the thing won't store those elements. And it'll have a lightweight implementation that will know that.
You use that, right, in CMGUI to generate a description? I mean, I don't know exactly how it works, but whenever I'm doing bioMUV problems, and I'm looking at the solution in CMGUI, I assume there's some interpolated solution.
Yeah, we do that as well. We have a special treatment of grids.
Right, I don't want to do that. So how is that
concerned? So how you do it is because if we have an object-oriented interface, then you can implement those objects in different ways. And underneath, you can implement a lightweight object that is an element lookup, but it knows that it inherits everything from its parents, and it goes and does that. So sitting here, you've got one sort of element, which is actually an element, which knows how to do everything because it's got its values and its nodes and it's a standard element. Alongside that, you can implement this other sort of element that knows it goes in and it gets everything from its parents. In reality, programmatically, it's a real element but it's just a lightweight thing that can go in here. I think we should be able to do the same thing. And in the same way, grid points become very equivalent to nodes, not we have nodes, because they're just point locations that know they have to inherit everything. The trick comes in that you don't want to store anything in those grid points, particularly their locations or even their desired positions. You want to be able to say, I have a collection of objects arranged from 1 to 100, and they all evaluate their fields in this way. And so it's a functional interface, and we haven't talked about how to do that yet. But I hope we can. If we can't do that in a general and fast, efficient way, then we will have to implement grids and grid-based VMs in a conventional way. And we can still do that within this infrastructure.
Couldn't those grids exist only in the computational part?
That's not what you're saying,
though, I think. That is what
you're saying. In a way, right? They do only exist in the computational part.
It's the only place it stores.
But you use them in the graphical end, too.
Yeah, and it'll still last for all those elements and draw them, and they'll just appear. Because as far as the graphics is concerned as well, it can just say how many elements you've got. It says I've got 1,000 elements or 100,000 elements. The fact that there aren't 100,000 elements stored anywhere is irrelevant. Because every time you ask for an element, it can...
I think from the point of the solder and the assembly of the biomain matrices, you can assume that those are local elements. Store
them cheaply, like
they currently
are. Yeah. I think that's what we're trying to achieve. We should finish so that we can have a PI meeting.
Why don't we have a meeting?
Thursday at 11, should we try that again?